comments and views expressed on The Kevin Smith Show are those of the people that make them and do not necessarily reflect the views of Kevin Smith, The Kevin Smith Show, or its affiliates or sponsors.
Hi, folks, and welcome to the Kevin Smith Show. Well, let's get that killed. It's been a while since that's happened. All right, there we go. Welcome to the Kevin Smith Show, whoever you are, wherever you are, all around this beautiful place we call Earth. Thank you for being here. Talk radio like nowhere else on Earth, and it is the show where you matter. I had an interesting experience today, and I wanted to share that with you just a little bit, because I've talked about on the air how it seems like a lot of the UFO and paranormal sites that have been around for a long time, a lot of them have disappeared, and they're not accessible on the internet anymore, and there are a number of reasons for that. Sometimes the owner of the site passes away. And then, of course, the site comes down. Sometimes the site has to be discontinued because of economic reasons or something like that. But there's this fading away of dominant presence of some really, really good sites on the internet having to do with UFOs and extraterrestrials and paranormal things. So today, just out of curiosity, I pulled up a list on the internet of UFO organizations. And actually, I did this with two or three lists, just to make sure. And most of these organizations list a telephone number. And most of those are listed as hotlines. So if you have a UFO encounter or some type of an encounter with an extraterrestrial, you can call that hotline. So I started down through the list, and it was the main list I worked from was pretty extensive. I started down through the list calling because I just wanted to see who's there, who's in business, who's still doing this. And had planned that anybody who answers, I would identify myself, tell them, I'm Kevin Smith with the Kevin Smith Show. I found you on the internet, wanted to talk with you just briefly to see if you might have some interest in being a guest on the show. And knowing that some of these would be people that maybe wouldn't make really good guests, but nevertheless, they're out there, they're doing their thing, and in the cause of discovering truth about UFOs, so okay. Ladies and gentlemen, not one single human answered. Not one out of the entire list of all those hotlines. Now, one of them, here's the way it goes. A lot of those, not a lot, but a few of those turned out to be non-working numbers. They're just not, that's not their number anymore, or they're out of business or something. Some of them had voicemail. The ones that were working numbers, most of them had voicemail. A few of them didn't, and it just rang and rang and rang and rang. But a few of them had voicemail. That's a hotline? And one of them said, we check our voicemail every Friday afternoon. We'll be back right after this.
Come on.
welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. Michael Horn is my guest this evening, and he has been my guest on this show a number of times. He's also appeared on this show when Jerry Wills was hosting the show. So I know you're familiar with Michael Horn, those of you who are regular listeners to the show. For those of you who are new to the show and perhaps new to this whole genre of information, you may not know who Michael Horn is. He is the American representative for the Billy Myers case. And we're going to get him to give us a little bit of a thumbnail sketch of, if a thumbnail is even possible, but a thumbnail sketch of the Billy Meyer case, in case you may be new to this whole genre. It may be something you're not familiar with. So, Michael, welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. Delighted you're here.
Well, thank you, Kevin. I am glad to be back and speaking with you. Again, it has been a while since you and I spoke with each other, and thank you for inviting me, for thinking of me and inviting me.
Michael, let's begin with just a recap or a thumbnail sketch, if you will, of Billy Meyer, the Billy Meyer case. Because you know, some people would say, oh, yeah, that's that guy over in Sweden that takes those pictures of UFOs. Well, there's much, much more to the Billy Meyer case. Whether people think it's for real or not, there is much more to it than just he takes pictures of UFOs. So let me turn the mic over to you for just a couple of minutes here and just give us a thumbnail sketch of this.
Sure. Well, you're quite right, of course. And I would add that actually, just to be technically specific, Billy is in Switzerland. And his...
What did I say?
Sweden, but it's okay because you were attributing...
I'm sorry.
You were saying some people might think he's a guy in Sweden, so that's fine.
Yeah. I meant to do that.
I'll give you the... I'm going to give you credit for... That was intentional. All right, so here's the story. He's a now 73-year-old man living in Switzerland, his home country, who claims that ever since he was a 5-year-old boy back in 1942, that he has been having wide-awake, voluntary meetings with human beings from another star system, and that these meetings took place and still take place, but primarily in the beginning they took place where he would meet outside in forests and meadows and all sorts of places. He would be taken on board their ships very often, though not each time. He claims that he was taken not only around this world, even since as a young child, to be shown various things, but even to other worlds and to other places in our universe and even back and forward in time. Now, Meyer has... as you mentioned, published what is a body of the most astounding, stunningly clear UFO photos, film, videos, sound recordings, and et cetera, including metal samples, which have been analyzed and tested by top-level scientists at top-level facilities, which is very little known by people, although I have a press release out and an article on my website about it. Basically, these... objects, these or the physical evidence representing them, has been shown to be not manipulated, no special effects, and done at a time when there were, of course, no home computers and Photoshop or anything else, and all of it, you know, presented by a man with one arm, one hand, and in some cases the photographs were taken when a camera was loaded with film by investigators, given to Meyer during the day. He went out for a couple hours, came back, they took the marked film that they knew they put in there, had it developed, and there were some 30-odd photos of UFOs. So while there are people who will claim that they can duplicate Meyer's evidence, they really can't. What they can do is they can take good pictures in today or film of small models that will, to the uninitiated eye and to anyone who has not yet understood the testing parameters, appear to be almost the same thing. That's just, you know, I'm trying to get that part of the evidence at least addressed that way. The most important evidence in this case presented by this man is in the form of information. It spans 59 years, and therein is where the case would be made or broken for somebody who is going to actually objectively and logically try to discern for themselves if this is true or not.
Okay, and we're going to get into some of the documentary evidence being the information that he was given, he says, by these off-world humans. Right. We'll get into some of that tonight. But let's talk just a little bit about this case in sort of general terms. This case has all the appeal to some folks in the UFO field. It has all the appeal of a coiled cobra. Why? They run from it. Why?
Well, let me tell you my my answer and my opinion as to why they run from it. And it's not going to be at all politically correct. And it will go along these lines. They run from it for a couple primary reasons, one of which is it is outside of their realities. And that means that most of the people that are having a great problem with the Meyer case, or at least let's say a fair portion of the people who are you know, having a problem with the Meyer case, have it because they have beliefs in things that aren't real and don't exist certainly the way they think they do. And I'll get into that more later if you wish. But let me go to the other part of it. And the other part of it is there is no way that they can profit by it. I hate to put it as bluntly as that, and I'm certainly willing to take the challenges that you will, and anyone else may want to, you know, pose to that statement. But here's the deal. If somebody who's, let's say, lecturing on Roswell or investigating UFOs, and making a bit of a career out of it, decides that they take a look at the Meyer case, and then they come to a conclusion that it's authentic, suddenly they are in the position of, if they're going to be honest, they're going to say, this is real. Now, if the Meyer case is real, it's far and away the most important story in human history. It means that the man has been telling the truth, that he has indeed been able to satisfy the standards of proof for people, that he is in touch with extraterrestrial humans. That would qualify as the most important story in all of human history. So if you are a UFO investigator or a representative for something that's called the UFO case, and you discover, however you want to put it, that this is authentic, and you tell people about it, they run out the door towards this, and they leave the rest of it, deservedly so, in the dust because there is no there. There is only anecdotal evidence at best, stories and recollections, some of which may indeed point to things that were true, such as the Roswell crash. But since there is nothing left that one can put, you know, in on the table, so to speak, and there is no way on earth ever to apply leverage to the so-called U.S. government to reveal the cover-up, which is actually only really about the Meyer case at this point, then you have the problem, to answer your question, that those who would discover the truth of the Meyer case would realize that suddenly they are out of business.
Okay, that makes sense. Let's talk about people on the other side of the fence. There are people, and we'll get to some of the specific debunkings and or attempts at and so forth in just a moment. But let's talk about some of the people that have come out and said this is genuine stuff. These pictures are not manipulated. And I found it interesting that among those, there are several big names, but one of them, everyone that listens to this show, I'm sure, is familiar with, and that's Malin of Malin Space Sciences. And in case, folks, you don't, the name is ringing a bell, but you're saying, who is that? Okay, remember the Mars Global Surveyor that was up there for 10 years doing fabulous work, photographing everything on Mars? thousands and thousands and probably hundreds of thousands of photographs sent back to Earth. Well, they were sent back to a specific place on Earth, and that was Malin Space Science. And they were in charge of receiving and, if you will, processing the photographs from the Mars Global Surveyor. What did Malin have to say about this?
Well, just so you know that I'm not sitting in front of a computer right now, to tell you the truth, but basically, and perhaps if you are, or if any of your audience members, you know, look at my site, check out the press release or the scientific experts' commentaries that are on the right-hand column of my site, and they can click and they'll see. Michael Malin, as I recall, his words were something like, these are good photos, they seem to represent something real, but the fact that a Swiss farmer claims to be on a, you know, first-name basis with extraterrestrials, I find that unbelievable. Well, you know, Michael Malin expressed his expertise as a photographic expert and, you know, scientist, and in the area in which the photos were submitted to him, basically he authenticated them, as did a number of other people. Now, it's important to know that subsequent to that, when that originally came out, it was actually in the book Light Years by the author Gary Kinder. Kinder was a skeptical researcher who somehow got the assignment to do a book on the Meyer case. And he did, and he interviewed a lot of the scientists who had indeed been involved in analysis of Meyer's evidence. And he did one more crucially important thing, and it was necessary, but it's of enormous importance here. He made sure that he submitted to each of the experts a written, you know, presentation, a text of what they were signing off on. And they all did, and that included Michael Malin. Now, this is important because subsequent to that, skeptics and people who, you know, have seen this information and decided to contact Malin and, well, I was misquoted, whatever he would do, which happens to be, unfortunately, fairly understandable when you realize that scientists, mainstream and successful scientists, who, are very, and rightly so, concerned about their reputations and funding and things, suddenly something that they did in honesty and integrity genuinely some years or decades before now is coming back to bite them because they never thought, well, this is, you know, going to go this way, and I gave his opinion, and it was genuine and accurate, and now he's got people, you know, challenging him, and what's he going to do? He's going to have his representatives, saying, well, Dr. Professor Malin never said that. He never meant. Sorry. As a matter of fact, if you ever are able to bring Michael Malin on your show, I will be happy to have a discussion with Michael Malin and see if he's developed some ability to slide out of having signed off on a legal document for his own words. It's not my intention to embarrass anybody, but I think there's nothing embarrassing about someone being in on the most important story in human history, the most important discovery, if he has the courage of his convictions, if he has integrity, and he's not beholden to other people and their money and opinions, then he should stand up and say, I signed off on that, and I am, and I was at that time, an expert, and that's what's my opinion. Yeah, have a nice day. So that's what I would have to say at this point about Michael Malin.
Well, with you, I would have to say it's understandable why they would want to back away from it in the climate in which we have found ourselves living. The sort of forthright mentality regarding UFOs. Because their careers and money is at stake.
Yes.
And I understand that. But I would say this. Sometimes people give a statement to the police, a sworn statement, and they sign off on it, and then when it goes to court, they testify to something different. And
that's right.
What happens in court is then the prosecutor puts the printed document, the transcript that they signed, and says, they put that in front of them, and they say, look, turn to page 28 of your testimony. Read line 126. And they read it. And they say, on that day, you gave a sworn statement to Officer so-and-so. Would you read what you swore to be the truth? And they have them read it. And no matter what they say now, what they said then and signed off on is what's pretty much going to stand in court.
Yes. And another point that I think supports that is, this isn't somebody that says, well, on that night I thought I saw such and such happen, you know, 2 months ago. This is a situation in which a professional in the field was presented with photographic evidence, and he was asked to make a determination. Had he said, these are outright fakes and hoaxes, and I can show you why, then that would have been a matter of record. And, of course, he had a significant amount of time in which to consider or reconsider his opinion, up to and including the time that the transcript was sent to him to sign off. Because let's remember that in the 1980s, which is, I think, when the Light Years book originally came out, you didn't put a book together overnight on the internet and publish it. You had to go through the whole thing with the galleys and the typesetting and all that. So the publishers had to have their ducks in a row, and they had to make sure, as even is the case today with certain things, that they had someone taking responsibility and signing off for what was going to go into a rather expensive proposition, so that they were not going to be out of the chute liable for character defamation and all sorts of other things, even though these things, you know, occasionally something may happen like that. Michael Malin never rose an objection to his contribution to that book and that information. And it wasn't until, the best of my knowledge, a few years ago when the main skeptic group, the Center for Inquiry West and Independent Investigation Group, Derek Bartholomew and all that, started to go after people who had, including forestry experts, who had signed off on the fact that the trees in Meyer's photographs appeared to be full-grown mature trees and not models. So they started to go after these guys to try to get them to change their story. And that is, that's okay, you can do that, but you're fighting a losing battle when you are going after so many people who were credible. You might get them now to want to say, I never say, you know, let me alone, leave me out of this. For instance, in the case, just to digress for a moment, the forestry experts, who there were like, I think, half a dozen of them that were approached by James Dierdorf, and basically they said, you know, those are mature, full-grown trees. We don't know what the thing is hovering around them, but we know trees, and the reason we can say that is, here's a pruning mark at a place, here's the nesting above, and the nature the branches. People don't make, you know, model trees like this, and for the time period, you know, they told the truth about it. Well,
okay, we have to step away for a break for just a moment or two, and we'll be back more with Michael Horn right after this. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. My guest this evening is Michael Horn, the American representative for Billy Meyer. Michael, we were talking about the issue of photographic evidence and people signing off on it as experts, people who genuinely are experts. And I just want to underscore again before we move on to something else that you mentioned. I want to underscore again that these photographs were taken at a time when there were no computers, no home computers, no CGI, no Photoshop, none of that available. And these experts looked at it and they said, well, whatever the object is truly there in the picture. It's not superimposed, and it doesn't appear the picture has been manipulated in any way. You mentioned metal samples as well. Now, that's something about the Billy Meyer case that I think a lot of people are not going to have been familiar with. Talk to us about that. What kind of metal samples, and where were they tested? What was the result?
Sure. Let me just say one last thing about the photographic evidence, that people should also know that these photographs were analyzed using what was at the time state-of-the-art equipment, all sorts of computer enhancement and microdensitometers and all, to determine that they were not also small objects close to the camera. And that's of huge importance. So to address the metal, Meyer was given a number of little pieces, ingots, squiggly things, of some kind of metals, and he was told by the alleged, if you will, extraterrestrials, to turn them over to the investigative team, and they would know what to do with them. So he did that, and Wendell Stevens brought them. Actually, people don't know, they were actually examined at two or three different places, and also especially by a scientist named Marcel Vogel. Marcel Vogel was an IBM scientist who was unique because he didn't even have a degree. He was simply a scientific genius who, when he was just a 10-year-old boy, he had succeeded in synthesizing the chemicals that create bioluminescence in fireflies. When, you know, at an age when most of us are playing ball or, you know, bouncing our heads off the walls, this guy is synthesizing the chemicals that create bioluminescence in fireflies. And, of course, Marcel Vogel was not just, you know, reputed to be a real scientist. He was the holder or co-holder of 32 patents, including, I think it was the magnetic coating on disks for IBM or something. Suffice it to say, he had some real serious credentials, and he took the metal samples. And he did a videotaped analysis, and he used, you know, spectral analysis, he did magnification, he did the things that were required to look at and analyze the metal, and basically what he concludes his analysis with is, with any technology available to me, and you can put in parentheses, at a scientist at a eminent scientific institution, an eminent scientific institution, I cannot duplicate these, you know, objects. I don't have the kind of lasers that apparently were used to do, very incredibly fine cutting, and I cannot put together every element in the periodic table in a discrete relationship to each other in a process that requires either the vacuum of outer space or cold fusion. We don't have either. Now, he's talking about pieces of metal turned over to him by a quote-unquote Swiss farmer. Now, of course, just as we would be ready to jump up and down, what happens? He puts the metal in a safe at IBM, and a day later or so, they're gone. And naturally and quite legitimately, everybody that would want to personally scrutinize and examine the stuff for themselves no longer can. And what has to be said about that is that it's not unique only to the metal samples in the case. This case has a lot of escape hatches for people, that is, skeptics, who are going to say, well, it can't be, and here's the best reason it can't be. Even some of the films or photographs, mainly in the films, people will try to say, well, that can't be, it looks like it's on a pendulum or whatever. The point being that if indeed we are dealing with people who are smart enough to be able to build objects that can fly through space and maybe even through time, they might be a couple less steps ahead of us in the psychological department as well, and hopefully they will take some precautions against so inflicting on us, against everyone's free will, a reality that not everyone is ready for, that they will build in escape hatches so that those people who are not going to want to pursue this more because they're not scared by it can get out that door and run down that road in another direction.
Well, it's a good thing I'm not one of these guys, one of these extraterrestrials, because my attitude is whatever is, deal with it.
Well, you know, Kevin, that is an attitude, of course, that is actually in this case, with one exception, and that is, from their perspective, and I think we could also appreciate their perspective. We have maybe 8 billion people on the planet right now. Maybe there was only 6 billion on when Billy started publishing. But the thing is this. There are millions and probably billions of people who are not ready to be faced with incontrovertible, irrefutable proof that there are other beings out there who can do what they want without any terrestrial constraint, and we really don't know if they're evil aliens of the disinformation, you know, genre, or if they're people who are basically benevolent, mean us no harm, and would like to help us, but also know they cannot insert themselves directly into our world for various reasons. We will not deal with it very well.
Well, I understand where you're coming from with that. But I think reality, you know, if a thing is true, it's true whether someone knows it. It's true whether someone believes it or doesn't believe it. If it's true, it's true. Long before we even knew the word oxygen, we were using it.
Yeah.
And it was a reality even before we even knew about it. And so I think, you know, and it's granted, it's my opinion. It's my opinion. But my opinion is that it is the ultimate foolishness for people to stick their heads in the sand and say this is the world.
Sure.
That doesn't, I'm not saying that they all have to buy into the Billy Meyer story. What I am saying is they got to get their head out of the sand, and if we're ever going to make any progress on this planet in any direction, you have to adopt the idea that whatever is just is, and we just have to deal with it. And, you know, the idea that I'm not ready to accept a reality, well, it doesn't matter. Yeah, look, right, let me put it this way. Let's say there's a giant asteroid on its way to Earth.
Mm-hmm.
And let's say it is big enough and moving fast enough that there is no technology we have that can completely avert a collision. Okay. Now, that's going to happen. We'll just say that that's the case, and it's a hypothetical case, but we'll say that's it. Well, that collision's going to happen whether I know about it or don't know about it. And I think we're better off if we know, so we can make whatever preparations we think we need to make.
Well, if I can say a couple of things about that, we're better off if those who can do something about it know for sure and who are willing to. And it's interesting that you brought that, you know, particular subject up, because the fact of the matter is that there is an asteroid on its way to our world.
Okay, I want to get to that, but I want to get to that, okay, in the second hour.
I'll leave that for now.
Yeah.
Let me just say that the difference here then is that with oxygen, and your analogy with oxygen, if we find out about oxygen, and certainly well after the fact of its existence by probably trillions of years,
mm-hmm,
it doesn't harm anybody or threaten them to know that there's an element called oxygen. When you have as many people on this planet who have strong religious beliefs of one form and another, which exclude the idea that there are other humans certainly floating around freely in space out there, if they choose to fly around, and that they can come to this world, and that they are not operating also within the beliefs or constraints of any religion, and in especially pertaining to the Meyer case, that the information completely contradicts the foundational structure of every major religion, well, then both you and I might be compassionate enough to understand why, for everyone's sake, everyone isn't forced to accept this reality. And it's, in my opinion, would also show that these extraterrestrials who've been in contact, allegedly with this one man, for, you know, some 68 years or, you know, whatever it is at this point, almost 70 years, that they are considerate enough of all the human beings on the planet, not just those who are ready to know, but those who aren't ready to know, so that the information is present and it is available. And those people who discover it and search it out and check it out and determine its level of accuracy for themselves, who want to then take the responsibility to share it with the rest of the world, can do so. But again, it must not be forced down anybody's throat.
Well, from that perspective, I mean, I think that's a good thing. And from that perspective, I can see it. I do tend to see reality, though, as, I think reality, I don't buy the idea, I hear it a lot, that we create our own reality. That's not true. We create our responses to realities, and therefore the consequences that flow to us as a result of our perspective. But the reality's there. We're not creating it. It's kind of like medical science at one time said the best thing you can do for folks when they're really sick is bleed them. The reality is they were killing their patients.
Right.
Someone had to force upon medical science the reality that they were murdering their patients.
That's right. And when they did, they also changed what we would call reality at that time, because that was reality for people. So maybe I would augment what you said and say, through our thoughts and through our feelings and through our actions, we contribute to changing and creating reality. Not ultimate reality of what is in this universe, but how what we do with free will and thought and all that does co-create reality. We change certain things. In other words, if an automobile is a real thing, it wasn't existing 200 years ago. It was brought into reality through human beings using their creative powers to take elements of reality and combine them to create something which is now part of reality.
We'll have to have a very long conversation about that.
Okay. I know you have other questions, so yeah. We can deal with anything you want.
Okay, now there are people who have made a career of being detractors of the Billy Meier case. And look, I'm going to say something that I don't think you would disagree with, because you appeared on this show in an online or on-air debate with one of the detractors, and that's this. Some of the detractors of the Billy Meier case are also pretty obviously targeting you, and you're kind of a lightning rod for them. You're pretty controversial as far as they're concerned. So what's up with that? Why? Well, we'll have to get into that when we come back from this break. We'll find out why Michael Horn is a lightning rod when we come back on the other side of this break. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show and my lightning rod of a guest, Michael Horn. Michael, why do you think you have become such a lightning rod for these detractors?
Well, here's my guess. We're going on about 10 years ago, I decided that I was going to take on the skeptics, who I perceived to be bullies and cowards, none of whom ever had the courage and the integrity to go to Switzerland, to hang out there, to talk to people, the witnesses, let alone Meier himself, people who were calling him all sorts of names and ridiculing and everything else. And I thought, you know, this is pretty shady stuff, and I think I'm going to stand up for this guy because I, at that time, I'd already been into this by about 20, 21 years, and I knew it was already authentic. I had done tons of research, and then I was on my own way to for my first of what are now a dozen visits to Switzerland. So I stepped forward and challenged these skeptics, starting with Center for Inquiry West, the amazing Randy, who had to retract his claim that the case was a hoax. And I've got all this stuff in writing, and of course they don't like to admit it. He should have written the check to Meyer's favorite charity for $1 million about 8-9 years ago, but he didn't. These people don't have integrity. They're basically a religion. They have come to the table with their beliefs, their mind made up, and they're going to try and fit everything into that. So I got on my little white horse and decided to take them on. And to be honest with you, it's a totally impersonal thing for me, strange as it may seem. I don't personally want to go and punch anybody in the nose. I mean, I know a lot of them would like to do that with me, but that's not where I come from. And it's okay because I feel, well, if we're going to need to stick our chins out there and agitate and irritate some people to get this discussion elevated to the right place, then let's get ready to rumble and let's go do it. I guess I'm glad I don't take this personally because there have been an awful lot of attacks out there. When I read some of them, I go, who are they talking about? That can't be me, lovable little me. So there it is. I just decided to champion somebody. And I have to say that what I mean by that is a man who himself not only has presented all this evidence and claimed all these things, but there are well over 100 witnesses. And the beauty of this with the witnesses is that there's probably at least a third of them who are multiple occasion witnesses, not a couple people who said, well, I thought I saw something in the night sky. People who repeatedly, under relatively calm conditions, daytime and nighttime, saw these objects. Some of these people have seen the extraterrestrials as recently as like a week or two ago. I have an article up on my website about it. So I know, and there's 5 or 6 other photographers, including a Swiss skeptic. So I thought, the least I can do is take the battle to these bozos and try and make a little headway here. Even if I don't manage to get them to fess up, we'll probably get the dialogue going with other people who may be interested.
Now, you said that for these skeptics, it's really, well, they're not skeptic, they're debunkers. But it's you said it's really more like a religion. But now I have heard them say, when you were on the show and there was the debate on the show between, I forget who it was, you and someone, they made the claim that it's the Myers followers who are treating this as a religion, that this is almost like a religious order. What would you say to that?
Well, I'd say that not one of these people has ever gone to Switzerland, where, you know, Meyer and these so-called religious people live, and they've also never read the material. Unique in the material in the Meyer case is, and I mean literally this, they do not ever use the word believe with any of their information. They say, this is what we know, this is what we don't know, this is our opinion, this is our information, this is a teaching. Take it, look at it, discard it, you know, work it through, find
out.
You're
talking about the extraterrestrials, right?
Around Meyer, people who, some of whom have known him for well over 30 years, do so voluntarily in addition to the regular jobs. They have created a group around themselves for whose rules they were responsible. They wrote their own rules. Meyer didn't. Meyer is one person in this community, one member, one vote. He's unique in that he is the lightning rod for the experiences, the contacts, but that's about it. Yeah, he's got expertise in a lot of fields, but he can't overrule people that when they start to do their determining what their rules and regulations will be, how they'll operate. So you don't have a one mind kind of people. With any group, you're going to have people that are, let's say, more predisposed to either higher or lesser standards of critical thinking, and that's true here too, just human beings. But they're not believers. There's no cult. They're not walking and going, Billy says, therefore. I know this. I've been there a dozen times. I know the people. I've worked with them. I've had my meals with them. Literally, I know Meyer. I know his family. They are people who don't talk about UFOs and extraterrestrials. This is the weird thing. There's more babbling in the United States about absolutely non-existent extraterrestrials and abductions and nonsense than you will ever, ever, ever hear there unless you go up to somebody and say, please, can I see the photo book? Can you tell me about this alleged extraterrestrial or what have you? Otherwise, they are busy with their work. It's a nonprofit group. They do charity. They publish books. And they try to live their lives according to what they think are truthful, spiritual, and human values.
All right. Now, when you said they don't use the word believe, are you talking about the extraterrestrials do not use it or the people around Meyer?
Both. It is simply not. I noticed it once in thousands of pages of transcripts, and I quote it because it stood out for me. What it was, Meyer was talking supposedly to one of the ETs about somebody, and the guy says to him, I believe the name of the woman in Austria you're thinking of is such and such. That was it. I have never, ever, ever seen them say, well, we believe this to be true. They simply don't. They say, this is what we know, or we don't know that. We'll try to find that out. Meyer, who answers questions every single month in an online forum, has, I'd say 10% of the answers are, I don't know. Because he's not all-knowing, obviously, and these people aren't all-knowing. This is part of the whole heritage of religion that has been taken on by the New Agers and the UFO community with imaginary, perfect, divine space brothers. These are truly, these are human beings, and this is why I would call, frankly, to a complete end to the whole charade of UFO investigation, exopolitics, MUFON, and all the rest of this. It serves no purpose except to run people in circles, and the proof of that is you can't show me anything that's come out of it that has changed consciousness for the better with real evidence in all the years they've been doing it.
Now we see why you're a lightning rod.
Sometime I'll share my real opinions, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Now, you have a radio show, and you have invited people to come on as guests, just as I do, and you've run into the same kind of thing that I run into from time to time, and that's where someone says, no, I don't want to be a guest on your show. Now, without naming any names, you invited a couple of people that were involved in the recent press conference at the National Press Club about UFOs and nukes. You invited a couple of these people to come on your show. They not only refused, but one of them basically said, don't contact me anymore. Mm-hmm. What's that all about?
Well, look, first of all, let me just say, because we have a disagreement here, I'm not going to tell you they're bad people. I don't think that's the case at all, number one. I have no reason to believe that. I think that they are in a personal paradigm challenge because they are heavily invested in this whole dramatic runaround about we saw UFOs. Kevin, the last UFO, the sixth one I've seen, was last March with another guy, other people too, in Santa Monica on a bright day for 20 minutes, a cylinder hovering over Santa Monica. I don't care about UFOs. It's irrelevant because either if there's something real happening, there's a reason, and let's get down to the reason. These guys, for all their good intentions, are still chasing sightings, and they are going to fight to tell you that, well, pilots have seen these things. If the Meyer case information is accurate, most of the physical objects we see are secret military, and a lot of the other phenomenon is natural phenomenon, and again, you're left with nothing. Now, it's not therefore, should that even be vaguely true? What's in their interest to come on my radio show where I'm going to say to them, look, we have a genuine UFO contact case, and you can challenge it on any level you want, and if you want to use any and all standards of proof, I'll make the case. What are you going to do about it? Suddenly their careers are over. At least one of them has a book out. This is the problem. If you have a vested interest, and this is your career, and you're going to make a name for yourself and run around and give press conferences, and somebody comes by and says, well, by the way, you know, there's some ETs, it's still going on. As a matter of fact, a guy I know in Switzerland just saw one of the women, you know, walk in Billy's office, and he's only one of several people that have seen them, and she went to sit down and read a book while he was working with the other guy in a translate. Oh, my goodness, there goes our whole thing. What about the evil aliens and the UFOs from outer space? And I'll wait till the break is over.
Okay. We'll be back, folks, right after this. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. For those of you joining us just now in this second hour, welcome aboard. We're glad you're here. My guest this evening is Michael Horn. And we've been talking about the Billy Meier case, a wealth of information in the first hour, a wealth of information yet to go in this hour. When we stepped away for break, we were discussing the situation where a couple of the folks that were involved in the latest press conference at the having to do with UFOs at the National Press Club were invited to be on Michael's show, and Michael they refused, and one of them at least said, "I'm not interested, and please don't contact me anymore. Your emails are going to be deleted. I'm not going to read them, etc., etc." And you were explaining what that's all about.
Right. And I should add that there was a little colorful language from that particular fellow that I thought was a bit over the top, since I hadn't attacked him, I'd invited him. But that's okay. I mean, again, I don't care, because I don't take things personally. Rarely. I mean, I'm sure there's something that's going to bug me personally, but that isn't it. And I just have to reiterate the main point to it. I mean, I'll be glad to answer anything else about it. But basically, if these people open up to the possibility that the Meier case is real and true, and if they open up to it being somewhat investigative and research-oriented, they're going to, in my opinion, they're going to know right away, okay, this is the real deal. They're done in terms of their own careers, because everything else is at such a lesser important level. It's all kind of what I call UFOs 101. Oh, there's things that fly in the sky, we don't know what they are. Well, okay, fine. Well, we happen to know what the Meier UFOs are about, and his photos, by the way, were first published starting in 1964. I mean, this is the most suppressed story in human history. That's how important it is. You know, if everybody in the world was walking around going, well, Billy Meier, I'm not sure, you know, that'd be one thing. Most people walk around going, who? Because this has been suppressed from the highest levels of intelligence, corporate, military, industrial, governmental, whatever you want to call it. And so investigators like these guys who think that they've, you know, they've got the story of a lifetime because they've seen something they can't identify, are suddenly left in the dust when a guy in Switzerland says, oh, by the way, I saw the extraterrestrial, you know, walking by and sitting down in Billy's office, and by golly, I wish I could meet him, but I know I can't. And another woman that we interviewed says, yes, I was sitting outside Billy's, you know, office window, and there were three men in there with him, and they were, you know, tall, and a couple of them were bearded, and they were wearing these silver outfits. And I asked the next day, Billy, who were those guys? And he looked at me like I was, you know, 4 years old and says, now, Bernadette, who do you think they were? I mean, this is the reality over there. It's not about UFOs. Could aliens be real? It's so far past that. And these nice gentlemen that are, you know, trying to bring this important stories forward and be on Larry King and all this, that's great. But if you have something that's just light years beyond that in relevance and importance, why not go there?
Okay, let's go there.
All right.
Over the years, information has been, or at least the story from Billy is that information has been given to him by these We'll for shorthand, let's just say extraterrestrial. I understand that what you're telling us is that they're human, but they're not from here.
Right.
So they are extraterrestrial.
Yeah.
Okay. He has written down what they've told him and has published some of it, and some of it has been translated into English. One of the extraterrestrials, actually I think probably the earliest extraterrestrial that he had contact with, it wasn't the earliest, but one of the early extraterrestrials was a female by the name of, I guess it's pronounced Asket.
Yeah.
And Asket is has some pretty interesting information that she gives Billy about our origins. What she says is that she, all of us, people that live, the people that we refer to as Palladians, are all descendants of the same race of people. We have the same forefathers. Talk to us about that a little bit. Who are these forefathers? Where did they come from?
Well, let me expand on it just a little bit to say that not everybody in the universe, and this is assuming that they're also right, that there's literally millions, if not billions, of human races scattered throughout this vast, vast universe. Not all of them were descended from the same lineage. However, the ones that she's referring to here, well, I'll take it back this way, that there was in the star system, the constellation of Lyra or Lyra, Vega system, there was a race supposedly that originated from there very long ago, probably originally maybe even in the billions of years, but certainly in the many, many, many millions of years. And throughout their history, they were a space-traveling race, of course. They were, in many cases, very violent and brutal, too. Things that they did would make us look like, you know, just kids fighting in the schoolyard. They had technologies that could, you know, destroy planets and in an instant and all sorts of stuff, if that's true. If not, you know, that's just part of the fable. Okay. Supposedly, some group migrated to the Sirian star system, Sirius A, Sirius B, and one particular group there developed themselves primarily along a spiritual positive level of development, but to such a degree that it was referred to also as positive degeneration. They eliminated their fighting spirit genetically from themselves, and they focused only on beauty and opulence and spirit and art and what have you. So they became a magnet for the opposite, for hostile space-traveling races that wanted to dominate or attack them. And so they quickly got about genetically engineering a human race that would have the capabilities and desires to be very, very willing warriors, very willing defenders of their masters, their creators. And they made two very specific genetic modifications to this line of human beings. One was that they modified and lowered their lifespans to maybe a tenth to a 15th of what they had, which is down to 100 years or less. And the second modification was to increase their propensity for violence and aggression, so they would be fighters and real good at it. And these two manipulations were done to this group. And to try to make the story a little shorter, part of what we're told in the Meyer material is that these beings, after they'd served their purpose, there was an element in the society of governing the Sirians that wanted to destroy them so they couldn't cause any more problems. And there was another faction that said, no, that ain't the spiritual thing to do. And that faction, after much back and forth in that society, literally, supposedly, one night took millions of these people and just fled from the Sirian star system to find a new home. Ultimately, they found a solar system that had three habitable planets, on which they settled, three different settlements. And one of these planets, the people, in time, still being highly aggressive, developed wars amongst themselves and weaponry, and they blew the place apart. And that's known as the asteroid belt today. The second planet was Mars, and the third was Earth. But this is going back in terms of the origins of these migrations and things goes back millions of years. In the interim, also, there have been comings and goings of other extraterrestrial races who stayed for a while. Some got stranded if their technology failed them altogether, and if that was the case, they either died off or kind of regressed to a tribal and more primitive level based on their needs to survive in primeval world, basically is what they were in, and some there'll be no traces of. Others, depending on historically when they were here, they may still have lineages, some of different peoples, and the most recent of the colonizations, if you will, was from a race that landed in the areas of China and Japan some 26,000 years ago for their final colonization presence on Earth. So the Asian races are considered to be the newest to the planet, though they are of an extremely old lineage of highly scientific space-traveling human beings. And this is a kind of overview on this. There are many interim gods, if you will, and you go back in the Maya material to the gods of the Old Testament and before, who they said were a specific lineage, who ultimately had based themselves under the Great Pyramid at Giza, and who were working on controlling all of humanity, ultimately through a false second coming. In their lineage of their gods was one named Jehovah. There was a guy also named Ashtar, who was a real guy. The people claimed to be channeling and all, and there's all sorts of stuff in this material, and it's all available for free to read, pardon me, off of my site and other sites. And again, you won't find the word believe in there anywhere. This is simply information as they have it, as they know it. The pyramids that we see in Egypt, the main pyramids, and others around the world, many of which were just built 73,340 some years ago, not 10 or 12,000 years ago. I mean, there's information here that is mind-boggling, and so much of it is still what I call speculative, because we do not have the means yet, if we ever will, of being able to discover things from such a far distant past, and many other things are of the un-as-yet-arrived future.
Well, I'm glad that you pointed out that there's a lot of this that is speculative. And one of the reasons I'm glad you pointed that out is I stress on this show that we present all kinds of information here for the purpose of presenting information. That's it.
Yes. Yes.
And I say on this show all the time, I don't believe anything. Either I know it or I'm willing to say I don't know. And I'm quite comfortable with saying I don't know.
Me too.
All right. Now, some of the information that was given to Billy from various of these extraterrestrials that he has published could kind of fall into the category of prophecies or predictions. And apparently, as I read your site, some of those have verifiably come true. Is that correct?
Yes, it is. As a matter of fact, I have an article that's linked from my homepage right in the center column called Will Humanity Wake Up in Time? And to the best of my knowledge and ability, because I also had some other people submit to me, everything we have in there, we can verify one way or the other that it was published by Meyer prior to the events or discoveries occurring. And this is scientific, environmental, world event-related information, not anything mystical or magical or maybe it'll rain one day in Bermuda. No, we're talking about specific information, global warming, whales and the problem of illegal and or environmental refugees, specific numbers of species, specific numbers of peoples, of measurements of sea level, stuff that if a guy's going to try and guess on this stuff, he leaves himself open for enormous ridicule, and the problem is that Meyer hasn't missed with it. And as I said about speculative, Kevin and your audience, there are hundreds of other things in the Meyer case, some that's already in English and some that's still in German. There's 26,000 plus pages in German, and we only have a few thousand in English of all of that, and thankfully there are people who are out there starting to work on the translations, but we know, we can prove that it's been in German for as long as the dates that are on it. And this is why an article like that is so important to throw at scientific people. Forget UFO photos, leave it all out of the equation. You take that one article, there's probably 100 specific items in there, and you go through those and you say, can you produce a book on this? And I say, yep, I can produce it on this one and that one. Here I've got the copyrighted published document. And you go, well, wait a minute, that's legal proof. You mean you can walk into a court of law and open a book and show me that that's in there? Yeah. Well, why doesn't everybody know about this? Well, because the powers that be have done such a nifty job of keeping people dumb and entertained with meaningless crap, celebrities in sports and extreme this and nonsense that, and get a makeover and blow plastic into your lips and butt, and that's the important stuff in life. In the meantime, the world's going down the drain, and we've been warned about it for 60 years, and nobody paid attention. Meyer was the first guy to publish about unnatural climate change, unnatural global warming, increase in activity in volcanoes, earthquakes, seaquakes, sinkholes appearing. I mean, this stuff's there. So the stuff I can't prove yet, and I don't know, I can't claim that I'll ever be able to prove it, those events haven't occurred or we haven't discovered something, but I have people that submit me corroboration. They'll say, hey, Michael, I was reading somewhere. Didn't Billy predict this? Didn't he predict that? I'm going, oh, thank you. I'll put it in the compilation. You're right. And I know where I can find it. You know, so This is the bullseye, Kevin, and this is what I've sent to these people, all these UFO and exopolitical people. I said, you know, don't babble on about UFOs. It's irrelevant. How's about this? Those of you that claim there are benevolent extraterrestrials walking among us and so-and-so's a contactee, I said, fine. Where's the meat? Show me. Prove it. Here's a standard of proof. Specific information. I use the term prophetically accurate to mean published in advance of so-called official discovery or publication. So that's prophetically accurate. Can you top this? Can you meet the standard? And nobody can. Nobody.
You mentioned in the first hour something that I said, let's hold that till the second hour, and that is information about an asteroid. And I believe you said there is an approaching asteroid of the nature that I described in my hypothetical. Let's talk about that. What is that about?
Sure. In 1981, and I first read it in 1986, I still have the copy that I scanned into my computer of the document that Meyer had this information in 1981. And as I say, it was the 86 publication, but that's close enough. And basically what we were told in there, what we can read in that transcript, and it's on my website, Meyer is told about an object that they call the red meteor. It is coming to a world near us, ours, as a matter of fact, and if our scientists universally or globally don't come together in a concerted cooperative effort to deflect it with existing technology, and I'm using these words deliberately because there's a payoff to this, then it will hit us in one of 2 years for certain. And when it hits, it will hit between the North Sea and the Black Sea around Eastern Europe. It will cause a global catastrophe, as you know, the byproducts of that on all levels will be global in consequence. And so Meyer, you know, he said, you know, the scientists of your planet should work. Well, can't you guys prevent it? Meyer's told, you know, we're not supposed to do that. We can't, but it doesn't have to happen if your scientists will get together. Okay. In 2004, an asteroid is discovered, and it's called Apophis. And my goodness, they say it's coming our way. Well, here's Meyer's material. It seems to fit the bill. Meyer then asks these Pleiaren people about a year after that, I think in 2005 or 6, by the way, you know, they've just discovered this asteroid Apophis. My understanding is that's the red meteor. Is that right? And they said, that's the one. It's coming. Yep. You know, and they could have said, no, it's another one or whatever. But they said, no, that's it. It's coming. And, of course, they'd set it up pretty nicely in 81 for that to be the case. And then just last year, in, I think, November, December of last year, the Russians, out of nowhere, call for an international effort to get this, you know, get this asteroid, Apophis, to not hit us, because they're now pretty convinced that it's coming our way, too. Then, just within the past few weeks, Rusty Schweikert, the astronaut, makes a presentation at the European Space Agency calling for an international effort to deflect with existing technology any asteroids that might be coming our way. People at the highest levels of military intelligence read the Meyer material. They know it's the real deal. They know they don't have to admit it because, you know, no one's going to force them to. But now some of them are starting to act on it because it means that their own butts are in the sling here. Otherwise, they live on this planet. They can't just get off on the day that the asteroid is going to clobber the heck out of the place. So some of them, for whatever natural human motivations, decide that they're going to now mount an effort to do that. Now, some people say, oh, it's just a coincidence. But when you've got hundreds of these things, and they're specific, and I think in our latest press release we talked about just, you know, the BP oil spill has now killed off coral. Meyer was warned specifically in June, no, the oil hasn't disappeared. A lot of it has settled to the bottom of the sea. This is going to cause other destruction. And there's other stuff coming from that, including mega waves, the poisons coming down on the earth from the rain, the stuff that this has gotten into the Gulf Stream. There's tons of this stuff they've been warning us about. So in terms of this asteroid, it's pretty clear to me that some of the folks in some of these, you know, levels here have taken the Meyer material to heart, and good. And they don't have to give them credit for it. It'd be nice that if they would share the wake-up call with the world, but they want to go about trying to, you know, do what they've been called upon to do in 1981 by some extraterrestrials, save your world from destruction.
You know, even though the Meyer material, as you said, completely conflicts with the foundations of every major religion on this planet, it is interesting that there is a prophecy in the Bible that's very similar to what you've just described, and that is, it's called Wormwood.
Yeah.
Did they say anything about whether that's the same thing?
I have not seen anybody raise that question. It's a good one to raise. I might get around to asking it myself. So the answer is it hasn't, to my knowledge, been correlated. And we also have to understand that we're talking about only the most immediate threat of a serious collision, the red meteor or Apophis, and, you know, there may be others, threats to the planet coming, although I don't recall anything that fits that Wormwood category. There are other things in something called Contact 251 that talks about all sorts of other dangers over time facing us, and you know, there's enough catastrophes in human life always to, you know, keep you busy. But the one that we seem to be, if we're wise enough, most, you know, will most benefit from focusing on would be Apophis as an incoming object.
Whenever you look at the, as you've described, a sort of immense body of predictions that have come true, doesn't that nudge you toward saying, I believe in the ones that haven't?
Well, in a perfectly honest answer, my answer is this. My suspicion is that on the prediction level, not the prophecy, because prophecy is still changeable, prediction level, if they've predicted something, I think you can probably set the clock to it, and if so, it's a good idea to prepare for things that you can't change, because a lot of predictions are things, such as the Apophis, that originate outside of our immediate, you know, world, and they concern things that fly through space, or, let's say, a terrestrial event like an earthquake or a volcanic eruption that isn't one that's been precipitated by human activity. A lot of them are, but let's just say that they say this is going to happen, it's just an event, it's and all that, then it's a good idea to prepare for it, such as they were the first to predict that there will be a 9.0 earthquake off the coast of Oregon, a sea quake that will run at a magnitude 9.0 for 5 straight minutes, that it will produce a tsunami that just comes sweeping inland and doing enormous damage, another sea quake and another tsunami, and perhaps we could also calculate that if that's so, that tsunami is, or those tsunamis as they retreat from that motion may be sweeping across the Pacific, towards Hawaii, towards Japan, who knows. But it was a year or two after Meyer published that information that a virtually identical publishing, I think it was from Oregon State University, I have the article up in my archived headlines, where they came out with the same warning. They don't have a date for it. And maybe I'll wait and say the rest after the break.
We'll be back, folks, right after this. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. My guest this evening, Michael Horn. When we stepped away for break, Michael, you were just beginning to tell us about a study that was published by a university, I believe you said, in Oregon.
Yes, Oregon State University made a virtually identical, as I recall, finding. It was about an earthquake that they were predicting, a 9.0 that could run for 5 minutes because of this, I guess, subduction zone or something off the coast of Oregon, and that could produce a tsunami, et cetera. And again, Meyer published this a year or two beforehand. They've also warned, the Pleiaron also warned, that the La Palma, I think it's called El Cumbre volcano in the Canary Islands, La Palma, that will blow at some point. Now, our scientists know this, but what the Pleiaron has said is, we're telling you as a matter of certainty, there's only one or two ways that you can actually prevent this thing if people were wanting to. But otherwise, it's going to blow and dump a trillion tons of mass into the ocean all at once. When that happens, a mammoth tidal wave, tsunami, will be generated that will not only sweep up the coasts of Portugal, Spain, and France, but head across the Atlantic at supersonic speed and then penetrate up to something like 12 miles inland. Just an unimaginable, unless you watch, I guess, these disaster movies, an unimaginable event that would claim the lives of 20 to 30 million Americans and others living along the eastern seaboard. They will not give dates for these things. To give dates would be counterproductive. We've calculated out that that is not something that would actually be beneficial to you. It's better to tell you that this will happen so your own scientists know if it blows, is going to produce a huge thing. We're saying it will. And that here are the calculations of what happens. Get yourselves established with escape routes so that a warning system, when that thing blows, you've got people on the move in an orderly manner off the East Coast and out of harm's way, et cetera, et cetera. So there are specific things that they've warned about, and some of the specifics, of course, some specific discoveries and things are in copyrighted dated books long before they occurred. And the difference there is with prophecies. A prophecy is a warning of an event that will occur with certainty if people do not make course corrections, having now received the warnings. So this is where we can always, up to a point, change things if we get busy. And this is why, if the people who are now starting to call for a means of deflecting the incoming Apophis asteroid, and deflecting is exactly what the Pleiaron said, blow a nuclear charge close enough to create a shock wave to deflect it. Don't try to blow it up, or you'll have a rain of asteroid pieces coming down on Earth. And now the Russians and others are talking about, well, let's find a way to deflect it. So some progress is made there. And hopefully, through a program like yours, which has a vast reach, people will get curious and go, well, what the heck is this Billy Meyer thing all about? And they'll start digging into it. And they can do, you can be reading stuff and researching for free for weeks and months here. actually for even longer. You won't have to spend a penny. Everything's linked up on the website. Go and do it. Yeah, I've got a great film, a documentary that we shot with Billy in it, the only one he would do, and answers questions, and we interview witnesses and all sorts of nifty stuff. But I'm not leading off the show going, buy my book, buy my DVD, buy this, buy that. We're here to disseminate the information and make it freely available for everybody to wake up, and that includes all the experts in the UFO and exopolitics community who are otherwise milking this cash cow of nonsense, until it runs dry, and hopefully they will just close up shop and get on with the task at hand, our future survival.
Let me say, the website that you're talking about is theyfly.com.
Yes.
And folks, if you go to my website and you click on Michael's photo on my website, it will take you to his website. It's linked. That'll only be up there until Monday night's show. Monday night we have something else up there. But this is an easy web address. It is theyfly.com. All right. Michael, I want to go back to some of what we've discussed already, but from a different point of view. Now, we've talked about, I called you a lightning rod. I don't think you would disagree that in some circles you certainly are a lightning rod. And the Billy Meyer case is a lightning rod in itself. All right, so here you have been doing this now for several decades, and you are seen by some of these folks as controversial. We've talked about some of them that say, no, I won't come on your show and don't send me any more email, etc. Now, here's a question that I'm curious about. Why do you do it? What is it that says to Michael Horn when he gets up in the morning, I am going to talk about the Billy Meyer case today?
You know, it's funny because that is what happens when I get up in the morning. I have to tell you, most of my days are spent one way or another focused and centered around this. And just so people understand, I do this for free. It's voluntary on my part. I love doing it. And the answer is that when it became clear to me, after a couple of years, it took me a little while to really get this, because don't forget, I'm picking up the information for the first time in 79 in the form of the first book. And then in 86, I get the first 1,800 pages of the contact reports, and that's fascinating. And then it's in 88 that I see the first scientific corroboration, and I'm starting to put two and two together. So over a span of time, I finally figured out, this is the real deal. This ain't no joke. It's not primarily about UFOs and flying saucers and extraterrestrials. It's about us and our survival. What could be more important for me to do? And let me just tell you, I'm not lacking for things to do in my life, and I still do other things, but my background's in the music, in arts, in inventing, in movement, in health, martial arts, all sorts of fun stuff that I love to do and still do some of these things. But all of that on my personal life is a bit subordinate to this part of my life, because this has a greater impact potentially for more people's benefit than any particular creative bit of wonderment I can create. I've got nice stuff. You know, I make films and all this stuff, write songs, but ultimately it is the lives of the people now and for decades and centuries to come that could be benefited by more people now becoming aware of this and shortening some of the suffering we're otherwise going to go through for certain. We've passed the point of no return on a few things, and we're going to go through it. A lot of it simply due to human clumsiness and stupidity. But I'm motivated by wanting to contribute to the overall benefit of humankind. It's just that simple. And it's not that I'm not going to get a statue anywhere. And even if I did, it won't do me any good. It's not about that. As you say, I'm a kind of a lightning rod, which I laugh about, because who I am in my day-to-day life, I'm kind of a almost mild-mannered kind of guy walking around that no one would know any of this about. And most people don't. So it's only those that find out, you know, that I'm this guy with a, you know, a bulldog passion for this particular thing. That's what it's about for me.
So would you say then that your motivation is to try and help save humanity?
Well, to be more precise, it is to try to help humanity, which is an ongoing, you know, event, hopefully, to use those terms, save itself. My contributing to do what I can now to help, you know, in this process of saving us, preserving our species, and creating a viable, livable future.
Have you noticed what we do to saviors?
Well, I'm not the guy. I'm the messenger. I'm the messenger of the messenger. And you notice what they do. Meyer has been the target of 21 attempts on his life, you know, so he's the real deal. I'm just the reporter.
You know, I think people should know that prior to this phase of Meyer's life, when he was a young man, he was hunting down people that today we would call terrorists.
Yes, that's true. He was hunting serial killers and mass murderers. He did it for three different police departments in India, West Pakistan, and Turkey. He was known as the Phantom in the Middle East. We show that in the film, and you know, talk about that a little bit. He has had the most amazing life. I mean, there's things about this man most people don't know and, you know, may never discover, and still stuff that I get to, you know, every now and then you get a new glimpse of something. I mean, this is a man who's lived a remarkable life, a rugged life. He did it all himself, and sure, he had these ETs tutoring him and doing this stuff, but he had to live his own life. He was in the French Foreign Legion at 15, discovered that that was not what he wanted to do. He didn't want to learned to be a killer, and he walked out across the desert to get out of it. He took on all sorts of things. He was kidnapped by pirates. I mean, this is like Lawrence of Arabia meets Indiana Jones meets Luke Skywalker, and he's the real deal. So take the ETs and the UFOs out of it, and you've got still the most remarkable life you could read about.
I'm glad you mentioned Luke Skywalker, because that brings up something that I took a note down and was going to bring up and have failed to do so. When you were talking about the information that Askett gave Billy about our origins and this race of humans that were extremely warlike, and then there's a breakaway group that became not warlike.
Right.
And then, you know, the conflicts between them and others who were warlike and so forth. You know, this sounds kind of like the plot of Star Wars.
Yeah, except it was told to Meyer before Steven Spielberg or anybody was writing anything. And in all fairness, what they have said as well is this, because Billy has at times asked them about certain things pertaining to some sci-fi stuff here and there. And they said, look, part of what we also do is we impulse ideas into your world in different areas that are not, you know, that are more benign or even benevolent, such as medicine and creative things for people that write movies and books and all, to implant or, you know, or produce an idea that they can develop that will actually have some truth to it, so that people can, over time, even though they're creating their own, you know, fictional embellishments, they can start to become familiar with the idea that they are not alone in the universe, and that there are really amazing stories of human development in this universe. And so if it comes into the form of a Star Wars or a Star Trek or anything else, it's a form of lubrication for our consciousness that will take place over many decades, and it's also sometimes an antidote to the extremely deliberate disinformation that was primarily conducted starting from 1915 on by the U.S. government and some others, and that was amped up and ramped up by President Roosevelt, late 30s, early 40s, whatever, when he recruited Orson Welles and H.G. Wells for the War of the Worlds radio broadcast, that they would do this under threat of death to themselves and their families if they ever revealed that this was what was behind it. And it was done to help create the image of the evil alien. At that time, it was, I think, Little Green Men from Mars. And that is exactly what we have with the so-called greys and the imaginary reptilians and the imaginary insectoids and the imaginary rest of these guys that all of the numbskulls and loony brains in the UFO community are running around yammering about and trying to sell books and nonsense with. There are none of these beings on this planet. There are no reptilians here. There are no grays here. None of that exists. There are occasionally some ET humans that sit down in Meyer's study with him working on the translations of ancient documents pertaining to our spiritual development, but oh, why should we bother with that when it doesn't have all the terror in it to drive people crazy? So you may also notice that in the past several months, there have been large numbers of so-called UFO sightings.
All right, we have to take a break. We'll be back right after this. And welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. We're on Final Approach with our guest this evening, Michael Horn. Michael, when we went away for break, you had just been saying there's no such thing as, and you listed several different kinds of aliens, and you said they're not here on this earth. And among those are grays. What about the, I suppose, millions of people by now who have said that they have, in fact, encountered these grays, and
sure.
People that have said that they worked with them in secret facilities and so forth. What do you say about that?
Well, there's two things, and let's just really quickly on the Roswell, where the gray idea originated. The information in the Meyer case is that these were biological androids that were created by the people in the Zeta Reticulum system, and they were the crews of these craft. They were not the actual ETs, and none of them survived. They're all dead, to make it blunt. And the it was a great thing to carry over as a wonderful image archetype for evil aliens. And the answers about why so many people think that they've had these experiences, I'll do this in two parts in a sense. First of all, mass hysteria is something that's real easy to get going, especially in a world where so many people are totally hypnotized by media and imaginary things to begin with. And most people don't understand that they've been exposed, anybody alive today for more than 20, 30 years has been exposed to negative images about ETs, all this nonsense about grays, etc. People that claim to have worked with extraterrestrials, I will guarantee you this, anybody with a top security clearance that's walking around saying, I was working with extraterrestrials in the, underneath the earth, is not telling the truth. They may believe it, and that's another matter. But let's face it, what is it that would be in a benefit for any extraterrestrials, any of them, to come here and say, apply for it? Can I work on the desert, underground, in your secret military facility? Oh, I know. Here's the answer. We'll sign an agreement with you that will only abduct people in exchange for giving you... You see, these stories are so patently absurd and illogical for the simple reason that if any race, first of all, can get here from the depths of space, their technology is so far beyond what we have. It's amazing. If they can float people through walls and do all the rest of this, then what the heck do they need to make an agreement with anybody about? Because they can conceal it, they can do what they want, and nobody can interfere with it. But people will swallow this nonsense hook, line, and sinker, They'll tell you that they've been abducted. For what reason? Oh, well, they needed my genetic material or my emotions. Really, they need your genetics. In other words, you, who as a human being of Earth are prone to having a short life, degenerative diseases, all sorts of crazy emotions and feelings and aggression and violence and all the rest of it, that's valuable to beings that by definition would have to be living hundreds of years. Over the process of having developed space travel, they would have to at least live that long for the formative stage. I mean, logically, Kevin, I can rip this thing apart, and I occasionally do. I don't want to use up all the time doing it. I'm glad to do it, but it's utter nonsense. Now, that being said, have some people actually ever been abducted by extraterrestrials? And the answer is probably yes. Even said so in the Meyer case, for what it's worth. There were contact exams done by some quote-unquote benevolent races that were curious, and they put people back. Supposedly, they wouldn't remember. Some people did remember. But most of this, the 99% of this, is hogwash, and there are no hybrid babies either. So that's the opinion here.
Michael, I wish you wouldn't hold back, but just open up and tell us what you really think about this.
I don't feel I'm ready for that yet, Kevin. I feel shy.
Well, you make an important distinction here, and that is there are extraterrestrials, and then there were these these biological robots.
Right.
Which, interestingly, I believe the official term used by military for them was extraterrestrial biological entities.
There you go.
And they're just sort of pre-programmed to do some things.
Right, and an interesting thing that Meyer was just recently told, the Japanese, he was told, within 30 to 50 years will create androids that can actually think. On our own world. So is it so preposterous that a race, and of course if that's true, but that a race thousands of years in advance of us at least could have done that already? And don't we have already evidence that the Japanese are pretty swift at creating robots of all sorts already? So we've got to get back into reality, you know, and get away from all this fantastic, scary, evil alien stuff that is promoted by military secret intelligence. It helps to fund the weapons programs. And just about anything that's going to be filmed these days of a UFO in the skies, you can almost guarantee is not extraterrestrial. So yawn when you see it.
Well, I don't know if I would yawn. I mean, even if I know it's ours, it's interesting to see something that you haven't seen before.
Yeah, I saw the stealth bomber once, and I blew my socks off. That's a really neat piece of engineering, and of course, it's light years behind all this other stuff.
Yeah, and you know, the basic shape and design was actually designed by the Nazis.
Yes, as the Nazis also had at least two kinds of UFOs that they were assisted in developing by some ETs that when they finally realized who they were helping, oh boy, and they did some other work to correct that, but they were not as bright as they could have been about that. They're humans. That should tell you everything.
One of the things that, and we only have a couple of minutes here until we hit the end of the show, but one of the things that I hear a lot is that, any race that could be that's so far ahead of us that they could travel across space to get here would have advanced to the point, they're so advanced and their technology so advanced, they would have advanced to the point that they no longer have any warlike tendencies. And I maintain that the presence of technology does not mean the absence of evil.
Yes,
now, if they're
we
human,
have enough evidence of that on our own Earth.
Yes. If they're human, then what about that? I mean, isn't there a possibility that they may just get ticked off and decide to smoke us?
Well, not the group that Meyer's working with. I think if they had that idea, they wouldn't have waited 70 years to do it. But there was a group of renegade Syrians that were based on Earth for some time until fairly recently, a few years ago. They had taken over some of the old structures on Mars. There's information about that on my website. Just to answer the question, though, evil, you know, bad and good, whatever way, positive, negative, it exists everywhere. And at every level of material development, we are tempted with abusing our development. There's no guarantee that just because you're a good guy today, you're a good guy tomorrow. We are responsible. That's the whole message in the case. We are responsible for everything we think, we feel, and we do, and that doesn't stop just because we're feeling grand one day and drop a dime in a bucket.
Okay, so the ones dealing with Myers have absolutely no intentions of turning the planet into a wisp of smoke. But then there's this group that you were talking about, the Syrians. They were here, and they were kind of renegades, and you've told us they've left. But doesn't that in itself sort of necessitate military planning for how to deal with these kind of extraterrestrials?
Well, yes. I mean, they even early in the Meyer case, he was told, in your future, your world will face a challenge from a very hostile race, and you'll have to prepare. You'll have to unify yourselves in a legitimate, unified, you know, world to defend yourselves against a hostile group because they exist. And just to, you know, to paint it out, the Syrians that were taken into control by other Syrians, they were a renegade, 62 nasty guys, but that's not what those Syrians of today supposedly are about, and they took these people into, you know, their custody. But we will have to face those things. It's not like you suddenly, everybody's walking around throwing flowers at each other.
I wish we had more time, but we don't, and we're just about to face the end of the show here. Michael, I want to thank you for being with us this evening, and if you will, stay on the line with me for just a moment. Ladies and gentlemen, that's it. That's a wrap for tonight. That's a wrap for this week. My friends call me Steel Eye. My enemies do too. You can call me whatever you want. Just keep coming back again and again and again. Until next time, so long, everybody.